Welcome to Prosperity Talk with the financial prosperity coach, Christopher Music, who has been a featured guest on CBS, NBC, ABC, and Fox affiliates, sharing his 20-plus years of experience in financial principles and how to apply them to your life and business.
Welcome to Prosperity Talk. This is P. Christopher Music, the financial prosperity coach, and I'd like to congratulate you for taking steps on the route to financial prosperity by listening to this show. You know, I created this show so that you could learn the fundamental laws of financial prosperity summarized in a body of knowledge I put together called The Golden Route, 21 Principles of Financial Prosperity. As a financial prosperity coach, it's my job to align correct solutions to help you improve your overall financial experience and help you achieve real financial prosperity in your household and your business while you live your art. With this show, I've decided it's my mission to bring you amazing content by interviewing innovators and experts that are truly rock stars at what they do. These professionals will share their experience and knowledge as it relates to the 21 principles of financial prosperity so you can apply them within today's economic and financial realities. So today we'll be discussing the Golden Route principle, invest prudently. And I have a very special guest who will be sharing his experience on how to navigate the decision of investment risk versus return. But first, let me give you my perspective on this vital prosperity principle. To invest prudently means more than investing your savings into a retirement account. It's about understanding the risks of investing, the effects of supply and demand on prices of different investment products and how they affect you, the various approaches to investment management, and of course, what's important and what isn't important in investing. So today I'd like to introduce you to my special guest. He earned his undergraduate degree from Mercer University and a master's degree in financial services from the American College. He is designated an accredited investment fiduciary awarded by the Center for Fiduciary Studies, Katz Graduate School of Business at the University of Pittsburgh. He also holds designations as a chartered financial consultant and accredited asset management specialist. He has been a registered certified financial planner professional since 1994. His career spans almost 40 years in the financial services field, resulting in an in-depth knowledge of asset and risk management, portfolio advisement, and practice management. In 1998, he introduced a fee-based turnkey asset management program to other financial professionals based upon the academic principles of modern portfolio theory. Welcome to Prosperity Talk, Robert Lindner of Lindner Capital Advisors. Thanks for joining us, Bob.
Thank you for having me.
Great.
Glad to be here today.
Great. So what I'd like to do today, Bob, is spend a little time interviewing you on the prosperity principle of invest prudently as it relates to helping our listeners understand how to navigate the decision of investment risk versus return, okay?
That sounds great.
Good. Good. So I'd like to start out by having you tell our listeners a little more about yourself, how you got started, and why you chose to start an investment management firm working with financial advisors as clients.
I started in the industry in 77 and primarily working with large medical practices. That led me to the part where they had significant assets and retirement plans, and they were not happy about the returns, the fees, and just the overall mix of the way their pension assets were being managed. And their challenge to me was, if you can come up with a better way to do this, and we'll certainly go ahead and listen. Well, just from my background in finance and even a master's degree program, we were taught that this whole idea of modern portfolio theory and diversification and low expense were all fundamental principles of having a successful investment experience. And no one, unfortunately, was really approaching that those retirement plans in that manner. So the first thing we did is we went back to school just to go ahead and see how we could design and build a well-diversified portfolio, low expense, that would meet the objectives of these particular clients. We were challenged, and we were challenged because of the investment medium that was out there. A lot of those things did not exist. So by about 87, we entered into an arrangement with was Federated Funds out of Pittsburgh. Today, they're a retail fund, but at that time, they were only available on an institutional basis. And we were able to go ahead and obtain for our clients a very low cost way to build a portfolio and do it on a fee based situation, so that there would be total transparency as far as all the fees and costs, so things everybody knew where things were. By the late 80s, Federated decided they really wanted to move into the retail space. And there was this fund in Santa Monica, California, this fund company that we'd observed, but they were purely an institutional play. And although we knocked on their doors for years, they were not letting investment advisors through the door. They had minimums of $50 million, $100 million and above for each client. And obviously, we did not have clients that fit that particular profile. By 1992, they let about a dozen of us begin working with them. It was an experiment for them, and it was an opportunity for us. Turned out extremely well. We had access to a fund series of funds that were asset class funds, and we'll talk about asset class funds versus index funds in a little bit. But we had access to funds that met our criteria, that were extremely low cost, that were totally transparent, and that we could design and build portfolios that would achieve the given result we wanted for our clients.
Well, great. Okay, so diving right in, Bob, there are basically two conventional routes of investing, the active versus the passive debate. Tell us the difference between the two and why your firm chose the passive modern portfolio theory route.
Well, let's just talk about that. I mean, we look at this thing called conventional management and the wisdom that even is somewhat predominant today, and it has been for 80 years, this idea of attempting to identify mispriced securities, relying on forecasting, trying to find undervalued securities and either based on timing or given certain markets. And the problem with this type of management is that you're constantly trading and you're running up costs and you're taking unnecessary risks as far as that portfolio is concerned. The idea of passive or index management basically allows you to go ahead and determine a strategy for the portfolio. It lowers the expenses associated with trading. It restricts what securities you're going to buy and hold within a particular fund, and then actually within the portfolio itself. And it prioritizes, low tracking over higher expected returns. Now, the third element there, and I like to look at it as an alternative approach, because academic research goes one step further and tells us we can, taking a piece of index management, we can go ahead and look at that a little bit better, because if we can identify securities that should not be in a particular index, that is, if I'm buying a large company stock, why would I want to put a real estate stock in that portfolio? I want to buy that separately if I'm going to go ahead and build a well-diversified portfolio. I also, with this alternative approach, I'm not forced to trade on where I've got to replicate the index on a continuous basis, which drives up trading costs. And then finally, we can add value to an asset class portfolio by integrating research, portfolio structure, and just the way it's implemented in terms of even buying and selling at non-peak times in order to go ahead and improve the return for the investor.
Well, that's great. So let's touch more on the academic study as a basis for the way your firm puts together investment portfolios. What is so important about the academic validation?
The original research, based upon the way we built our portfolios, was came out of the University of Chicago. A young graduate student developed a premise, and it's still today referred to as modern portfolio theory. Today, it's not quite as old as I am, but it's certainly got some age behind it. The wisdom still works, though, and that is that we're going to go ahead and look at the core elements of what we need to go ahead and achieve a return over a long period of time. One is that we want to match risk and return. Everybody wants to get a 20% return and take no risk in doing it. On the other hand, in order to take no risk at all in a portfolio, you can expect maybe a 1% or 2% return. Today, if we look at what you're earning in a money market account or a bank savings account, the penalty for going ahead and taking no risk at all is a totally inadequate return on your investments. There's a balance somewhere in there for every investor of what he is comfortable with in terms of risk, and therefore what he can expect in terms of return. When we design a portfolio, we design a portfolio to capture the highest possible return for an investor's given level of risk. So we used to do this at one point in time with financial calculators. Today we can do in a matter of minutes what took us a week to do early on. But truly, a portfolio is structured to achieve the highest possible return for a given level of risk. And that's really the premise behind modern portfolio theory. Maximizing your return based upon your given level of risk, not somebody else's.
Well, great. And in order to implement all of this, you had alluded to this institutional firm in Santa Monica. I'd like to have you tell me about them and as why you chose them as your primary fund company. And how is an institutional fund company different from a retail fund company? Because I don't think our listeners really understand the difference between the two. And then finally, how did you actually get started with that firm in Santa Monica?
Dimensional has its roots going back to the early on. The first S&P index fund really was not even created until the late 70s. That's when we first saw the first idea of this. You could take securities and actually build a portfolio of securities. And it was largely done to satisfy the needs of very large retirement plan sponsors. From that premise of taking large company stocks, the S&P 500 index, the very same folks that wanted that done came back and said, look, if we look at the behavior of large companies versus small companies, they don't perform similarly at given times. So when large companies are doing well, small companies may not be doing as well, but when large companies are not doing so well, small companies tend to do much better. We'd like a small company fund. And the folks that had were responsible for the S&P index funds, those first funds, basically rejected that whole idea. The gentlemen that were involved in that decided they would go out and start a small company fund, which is what they did. That was the premise behind the beginnings of dimensional funds. And the idea was to not only go ahead and do a small company fund, but capture the best dimensions of the small company space, thus the name dimensional funds or DFA, which is what they did. They were so successful at it. I mean, today we look at a company that is either sixth or seventh in terms of total assets. They have no relationship with wirehouses or things like that. Dimensional approaches it from the standpoint of you find us if you like what we do, and we will decide if we want to work with you. So on an institutional play like this, they don't have the world does not have access to it. The retail investor does not have access to dimensional. The wirehouses, the Morgan Stanleys, the J.P. Morgan, the Merrill Lynch's of the world do not have access to dimensional. It's a very tight click, and yet somehow with, you know, when we look at the number of total investment advisors of 28,000, Fewer than 1,500 have a relationship with Dimensional. And then if you look at what I do in my space, probably only about 14 firms in the country do what I do as far as actually taking Dimensional funds, building and managing portfolios for other investment advisors so that they can basically bring those funds to their clients in a very cost-effective manner. The idea behind running portfolios, building portfolios, the compliance behind this, the analytics behind this, the operations area behind this, all of those things would be prohibitively expensive for a solo practitioner or even a small firm, less than $10 million in revenue, to go ahead and effectively manage. The cost would be prohibitive. And the only way you can do that is to pass that cost on to your clients, which is not the advisors that work with us basically want to contain those costs as best they can, and therefore they choose to bring or work with Lindner to work with their clients in order to keep all of those expenses at a minimum.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. You know, so I guess I have to ask you, what would you say would be the top three reasons that you continue to use Dimensional Fund Advisors as your investment choice in your portfolios?
One is transparency. We're extremely familiar with everything that goes on within Dimensional. There are no secrets to what they do and how they do it. They do it in an extremely disciplined manner. They do it in an extremely cost-effective manner. And I've got to add a fourth one. The academic research that we worked off of back in the 80s, I mean, there have been 8 Nobel Prizes awarded over the years for that, you know, for not only that research, but ongoing research. Just because they found a better mousetrap, and we found a better mousetrap back in the 80s and 90s, that hasn't changed. So today, the way they build and the way we'll look for them to build their funds basically takes advantage of the latest academic research. And when I say that, it's been tested for 5 or 10 years before it ever makes it into a portfolio in order to go ahead and generate a better return for the client without adding any additional risk to what they're doing.
Well, that's awesome. Now, Bob, I have one last question for you. Why is it important for investors to hire a professional versus doing it themselves?
If you're talking plain vanilla funds, I can't tell you that there are some folks out there that could do it by themselves. I will tell you that in the case of using Dimensional funds, the reason why they will not go into the retail space is because they capture the highest dimension of an asset class or an index, however you want to look at that. But that for the average investor, they lack the discipline to not only build that portfolio correctly, but once it's been built, to go ahead and continue to have the discipline to stay in that portfolio. Humans are not wired for disciplined investing. I did an article just recently about why rats actually are better at making decisions than humans are. And it's there's really a lot of great thought behind that one. But investors follow their emotions. I'd argue that rats don't. Reacting can hurt performance for sure, and that is it. I don't know how you feel about it, but to me, those times that I have gone out and bought an individual security, the day I buy it, it seems that that's the day that security starts declining in performance. And the day I sell it, it just starts going up in performance. So, I mean, the fact is, if we do things based on our emotions and even based on our research, chances are reacting like that can hurt our performance. Markets have continuously since going back before 1900, have always rewarded discipline. And the one thing that an advisor can bring to the table is to make sure you're disciplined, to make sure that you understand the core concepts about why you built a portfolio, why it's been built the way it is built, and what it's supposed to do for you on a long-term basis, and why you need to maintain that discipline, regardless of market cycles. You have to focus on what you can control. And my argument, you as an advisor can control 95% of what goes on with a portfolio. The 5% you can't control is what we refer to as a black swan event. It may be, you know, the financial crisis. It may be the World Trade Center crisis. It may be the market crash of 87, things of that nature. Those things you as an advisor can't control, but we recover from those things, and we recover very quickly from those things typically. So as an investor, chances are when you pull out of the market, you pull out at the wrong time, you've lost, and your fear about going back into the market really precludes you from taking advantage of a market upturn, which always follows a market decline.
Well, sure. And I, Bob, I really appreciate that insight. Now, I'm sorry, that's all we have time for today. And I'd like to thank Robert Lindner for being with us and sharing his experience and knowledge. Bob, you truly are a rock star. But before he goes, he has offered a special white paper called Empowering the Educated Investor. And it's available for a free download at www.econologicsfinancialadvisors.com. That's ECONOLIGCS Financial Advisors with an O.com. Thanks, Bob, for being here. I really appreciate it.
I really enjoyed it. I'd love to come back anytime. Just let me know.
Great. We'll certainly do that. Folks, our financial experiences, whether a good experience or a bad one, really comes down to one simple element: planning. You see, financial planning is a very misunderstood concept. In actuality, it's really very simple. It's all about time and money. Correct financial planning allows us to reverse the sequence from spending time making money and allows us to convert that money into time. I think it's important to remember that prosperity is not only about financial security, but it's about abundance, growth, and expansion. So grab a pen and paper right now and answer this simple question for yourself. Based on what you learned today from Bob, what one simple thing could you do this week that would move you forward on your route to financial prosperity? Write it down, make a plan, and then make it happen. The financial position you find yourself in today is your indicator of how well you have understood and applied these 21 basic principles from the Golden Route. It is my hope that you use this wisdom to achieve what is most important to you. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Prosperity Talk. Please visit my podcast channel at www.financialprosperitytalk.com to download previous episodes of Prosperity Talk. I also want to invite you to connect with me on all my social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, LinkedIn, and YouTube. You can find a link to all my social media on my website at www.pchristophermusic.com and learn more about the Golden Route 21 Principles of Financial Prosperity there as well. I invite you to follow me and have a discourse with me so you too can have a very successful, positive financial experience while you live your art. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to Prosperity Talk with the Financial Prosperity Coach, Christopher Music. For more information on prosperity principles and how to apply them to your life and your business, visit Christopher's personal website at pchristophermusic.com or connect with him on Facebook at facebook.com/pchristophermusicauthor. You may also call Christopher's office at 727-588-1540 to request more information or arrange for him to be a guest speaker at your next event. That's 727-588-1540 or visit pchristophermusic.com.